Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Service Integration Bus Link Configuration and Troubleshooting. The presenters are John C. Cola and Tai Sheikh. John C. has worked with IBM for 11 years. Prior to MQ Level 2 support, she worked in portal testing. For the last 3 years, she has focused on supporting the Service Integration Bus and WebSphere Extended Deployment Group of products. Starting in 2015, her focus has been on the WebSphere Application Server CET Level 2 support team. Tai has been working with IBM for over 20 years and has been with the Level 2 support team for Service Integration Bus since the release of the product. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to John C.
Thank you very much. Hey, guys. Good morning, everyone. This is John C. Cola from WebSphere Support Level 2 team. Thank you very much for taking time and attending this presentation, Service Integration Bus Link Configuration and Troubleshooting. This presentation is intended to be mid-level technical, and we hope audience has some basic knowledge of Service Integration Bus and its functionality. Not only WebSphere Application Server customers use Service Integration Bus component, but also other IBM Stack products like WebSphere Business Process Manager, BPM, formerly known as Process Server, WPS, WebSphere Enterprise Service Bus, ESB, WebSphere Partner Gateway, WPG, Lotus Connections, WSRR, and many other IBM Stack products use this SIP component internally. So this presentation applies to all those products also wherever SIP component is being used. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 2, agenda. In this session, we will cover the following topics. The first one is, what is a SIP link? What is the use of the SIP link, ARCA, again known as a bus link? Bus link and SIP links are the same, but some people call it SIP link and some people are called as bus link and SIP link. And under what circumstances bus link is used? And introduction to bus links. We will walk you through the each step, most of the major steps of the SIP link configuration. In this presentation, I have included the key configuration steps and screenshots. Some basic steps and some screenshots are not included, like how to create the bus and how to add the bus member, etc. Because these are pretty basic steps everyone knows. So I skipped all those steps and screenshots in order to complete this session in 1 hour time slot. After the configuration part, my colleague Tai Sheikh will cover the bus link troubleshooting, how to troubleshoot the issues like SIP link is not starting and other configuration issues and other runtime issues, generally what we see in our day-to-day PMRs, which we receive from customers, like messages, transmission is not happening, and messages stuck, etc. And then followed by the bus link tuning, how to tune the SIP links. This is the pretty much basic agenda for this today's session. Next slide, slide number 3. What is a SIP link? A service integration bus, again in general we call that one as a SIP, and also the bus, from now onwards we call bus from here. Must be contained inside of a single cell. That means bus cannot span across the multiple cells. So what that means is bus is dedicated to and also owned by one single cell only. However, cell can contain any number of buses, 1 to n number of buses. In a cell, as mentioned, as a cell that contains any number of buses, in this situation, each bus in the cell is separate and not connected to any other bus. So each if you have two or more buses in a single cell, each bus is independent on its own and cannot communicate each other by default. And each bus is remote, or we call that one as a remote bus to the other bus. And by default, applications interoperate only with the other applications that are connected to the same bus. For example, if you have two buses and two applications are connected, for example, application A and B are connected to bus A, and application C and D are connected to the bus B, then messages can be transmitted between application A and B, application B, because those two applications are connected to the same bus. And either application A or B cannot communicate to the other applications which are connected to the other bus. So by default, there is no communication, so no message transmission between the applications if they are connected to a different buses. Service integration bus links, that is the one which we are going to discuss in this one. This is what allows you to connect the buses in the same cell or in the different cells. You can configure the SIB link between the cells that are hosted in a different cells. SIB link is used to connect two different buses so that applications in one bus can send or receive the JMS messages to the applications which are hosted in the other bus. Messages flow across the link between these two buses. That is what the basic definition of the SIB link. In order to make the communication between bus A and bus B, we need to configure a service integration bus link. From here, we call that one as a SIB link. There are many reasons customer configure separate buses. For example, there are some type of in some circumstances. In an organization, customers has different departments like finance, accounts, and other departments. They want to make privacy and independent of each department. They create different buses for each department. So, and also in addition to that one, for simplicity or isolation, customers want to scope unrelated messaging applications within the separate cells or buses. I'm not going to read all the remaining points here, whatever I mentioned, different reasons to configure different buses. So these are the pretty basic reasons we see our day-to-day job customers use different buses. And in order to make the communication between the buses, we need to create the SIB link. That is what the basic definition of the SIB link. Let's move on to next slide. Slide number 4, introduction to SIB links. An application connects to a bus, which we call that one as a local bus, and can exchange the messages with the other applications which are connected to the same bus. For example, just now as mentioned, if there are two applications, application A and B, are connected to the same bus 1, then they would be able to exchange the messages without any additional configuration is required. Just what applications need to know is the bus name and the queue name. All the remaining message processing is being taken care by the SIB internal core in case of the local bus. In case of the different buses, the remote buses, to exchange the messages with the applications which are connected to the different buses, that is a foreign bus to each other, we need a service integration bus link that connects to the local bus to the foreign bus. here in this diagram, it shows there are two different ways to define the bus links. One is the direct connection, and the other one is the indirect connection. In this diagram, if you see the slide number 4, the diagram here I mentioned what is now direct connection and indirect connection. Here, bus 1 and bus 3 are connected directly with using the direct connection. This link is called as the service integration bus direct connection. In case of bus 1 and bus 5, these two are not connected directly. There is an intermediate bus. Here, in this case, bus 3 is the intermediate bus between the bus 1 and bus 5. So the communication between the bus 1 and bus 5, we call that one as an indirect connection, and bus 3 is the intermediate bus that is communicated across the bus 1 and bus 5. These are the two different connections for the siblings. One is the direct connection, and the other one is the indirect connection. Next slide, slide number 5. Here, sibling bus link terminology. Here, these are the basic terms we generally use in our bus link configuration and also in SIB terminology. The very first one is the local bus. The definition of the local bus is a service integration bus that you want to connect from known as the local bus. Here in this diagram, if you see the left-hand side big box, the first bus and the producer application. Here for the producer application, the first bus is the local bus, and ME1 is the local messaging engine. So that means that is directly connected to the bus. So the second one is the remote or foreign bus, a service integration bus that you want to connect to known as the foreign bus. Here in this diagram, for the producer application, the second bus, which is on the remote cell, we call that one second bus as the remote bus for the application, producer application. Here, vice versa, for the consumer application, the second bus is the local bus, and first bus is the remote bus for the consumer application. Next one, the third one, local queue, SIP destination in the local messaging engine. Here in this case, if you see the left side box and the queue in the first bus, which is Q1, that is called as the local queue for the producer application because this is directly connected to this bus. The fourth one is foreign queue. A foreign queue is the local representation of a queue that is defined in the another bus. That is the foreign bus FQ. Foreign bus, and the name of the name of the queue is FQ. If you see here in this diagram, FQ in the left side box, which is defined in the first bus. We define foreign queue in the first bus, which is referring to the local bus in the second bus, which is Q2. So that means the foreign bus is the local representation of the queue that is defined in the another bus. Here in this case, FQ is the foreign queue that is the local representation of the Q2, which is hosted on the second bus. Indirect sibling, the last definition. Messages routed to a foreign bus indirectly to one or more immediate buses. In the previous screen, I defined what is the indirect connection. That is the same as the indirect sibling. If the buses are not connected directly and connected through another bus, which is the intermediate bus connecting between the two buses, that connection is called the indirect sibling. In the previous slide, from bus 1 to bus 5. Next, move on to next slide, slide number 6. Okay, bus link configuration. Here, these are the basic configuration steps we need to do in the local bus as well as the remote bus in order to communicate through the sib link. So on the local bus, a destination on the local bus to send JMS messages where the producer application is connected to. And the second one is the foreign bus connection on the local bus that refers to the remote bus, which we will define in the later slides. And also we will provide the name for the local bus link, and also we will define the foreign bus destination in the local bus, in the first bus, which refers to the destination on the remote bus. The destination on the remote bus is where actually we want to send the messages finally. This is the configuration we need to do in the local bus. At the same time, on the remote bus, these are the three steps configuration we need to do. We need to define the destination on the remote bus, which is where we want to send the final destination of the messages. And step number 6 and 7, the foreign bus link, and also 6 and 7 are the same step of the configuration, but we defined in the different because we need to use the same name for the forward and backward at the sending side and the receiving side of the bus. The one last step is we need to define the forward routing path in the local bus so that whenever your producer application send the messages to a queue, those messages should automatically route to the remote destination in the remote bus. This, there is a way, just we need to define the, one simple step for the local queue in the first bus. These are the pretty much basic configuration steps we need to create, we need to configure between the local bus and the remote bus in order to communicate the messages between the two buses. And also, as I mentioned in this presentation, I skipped some of the basic slides and basic configuration steps like how to create the bus, and how to add the member to the bus. I skipped those minor, very simple, basic configuration steps in order to make the presentation to fit into the 1 hour. In this example, the local bus is called the first bus, and the remote bus is called the second bus in my next slides, upcoming slides. Next slide, slide number 7. Okay, bus link configuration. Here, the very first thing we need to do is we have already created the first bus and we already added the bus member to the bus in order to create the messaging engine. And the next step is we need to create the local queue where your JMS producer application send the messages to. You need to go to the bus and then, as mentioned in the screenshot, go to the, click on the destination resources and click on the destinations link, and you will be able to create the queue and just give the basic things in the local queue and give the name, and it will automatically create a queue for you to send your JMS application messages to this queue. Here, when you click on the new, it will give you the different options like local queue, topic space, alias queue, or foreign queue. Here, we need to choose the just the queue, which is the local queue, basic, normal, default local queue. No additional configuration is required for this queue at this point. Next slide, slide number 8. So here in this screen, once you created the queue and go to the first bus, which is the local bus screen, and if you in the right side screen topology, in the under topology section, click on the foreign bus connections, and there you will be able to create the foreign bus connection, which is a sibling configuration. And here, one more thing I would like to add. When you create the foreign bus connections, you can configure either service integration bus or WebSphere MQ as the foreign bus. When you choose the WebSphere MQ as the remote messaging engine, in that case, WebSphere MQ Queue Manager acts as the remote foreign bus. These are the two options for the foreign bus connections, so SI bus and also the WebSphere MQ. Here in this example, we are using the service integration bus as the foreign bus. Next slide, slide number 9. Okay, here is the main screenshot and configuration step you need to give for the SIBlink configuration in the local bus. Here, if you see, there are two radio buttons. One is configure. The first one is configure a foreign bus in the remote cell, and the second radio button is configure the foreign bus in the local cell. As I mentioned, you can create the SIBlink for the buses which are in the same cell or which are in the remote cells. For example, if cell A has bus A and cell B has bus B, you can create the SIBlink between those also. In that case, what you need to do is you need to choose the first radio button, which is configure a foreign bus in a remote cell, and you need to give the name of the service integration bus and the gateway messaging engine in the foreign bus. Here in this example, both of my buses are in the same local cell, so I choose as the second option, configure foreign bus in the local cell. So here we need to give all the configuration parameters, what is the name of the remote bus, and what is the name of the gateway messaging engine. And if you define cluster as the bus member, and if you choose the scalability core group policy, you can have more than one messaging engine. In this case, you can choose whatever the messaging engine you want to have act as the gateway messaging engine in order to create the SIBlink between our local messaging engine and in the foreign bus messaging engine. And the third one is the service integration bus link name. Here, this is the one, the name of the bus link. Please make sure that you need note this name, and because you must use the same exact same name on the remote bus SIBlink configuration also. This is the very critical and unique name you need to give between the two buses. If you give the different names, the SIBlink won't happen and it won't occur. And the next one is the target inbound transport chain. If you are using the non-SSL or non-security ports for the service integration bus, you can use the inbound basic messaging. If you enable the security for the SIB, then you need to use the inbound secure messaging as the inbound transport chain. And the last configuration parameter here in this screen is Bootstrap Service Integration Bus Provider Endpoints. This is the host name of the remote messaging engine. Here I have both buses in my local machine. So I gave local host, and 7276 is the SIB endpoint port of the remote messaging engine, and Bootstrap basic messaging here is the inbound transport chain. And this is the same as the provider endpoints for the remote messaging engine. This is the basic and key important step for the SIBlink configuration. Next slide, slide number 10. Okay, now let's go to the foreign bus and foreign bus connection and configuration in the first bus and verify that the bus link exists, whatever you configured in the previous screen. To do that one, go navigate to the first bus and foreign bus connections, and where you will see the second bus as the foreign bus connections, because in the previous screen we defined the second bus is our foreign bus. So you should see the second bus in the name of the in the list of the foreign bus connections, and click on that one, and this is the screen what you see when you go to the second bus in the foreign bus connections. Then click on the service integration bus links, and there you will see the name of the link and everything. Next slide, slide number 11. Here we see the name of the sibling, whatever we gave in slide number 9. And here also you can see the name of the local messaging engine and foreign messaging engine, and what is the status of the sibling. Here it is showing as the question mark, that means which is unknown. We have not completed the complete configuration, that's why we are seeing the status as unknown status in this screen. And also this will give you what, how many are the, once you are done with the configuration, what are the outbound, current outbound messages, and how many messages are sent, and how many messages are received. Everything here you would be able to see in this screen about the sibling configuration and sibling back and forth communication of the messages. Next slide, slide number 12. Okay, here is the foreign bus. Here is the foreign queue we need to create. As I mentioned, foreign queue is the queue in the local bus that refers to the destination in the remote bus where finally messages should be destined. So just to go to the your first bus and go to the destination and create new, and please make sure that you are choosing the foreign bus here in this screen, because this is the reference of the remote queue in the remote bus. This is the way how to create the foreign bus in the local bus. Next slide, slide number 13. Okay. When you are done with the creation of the local queue and foreign queue, if you navigate to the first bus destinations, this is the screen you would see. Here, these are the two queues we have configured for this configuration. One is the local queue, and the local queue is, that means queue, and the other one is the foreign queue. You can see the bus also, name of the bus. If you see the first bus to second bus foreign destination, the name of the bus is mentioned as the second bus, because this is the foreign queue we have defined, which is referring to the remote bus, second bus. This is the difference between the local queue and the remote queue. Next slide, slide number 14. Okay, now now it's time to do the configuration in the remote bus, which is the second bus. These are the few things we need to configure. One is we need to define the local queue in the remote bus where finally the messages should send to. And the second one is the create the foreign bus connection and also provide the name of the link, name of the bus link and everything. Next slide, slide number 15. Okay. The first one is we are creating the local queue in the remote bus. For that one, go to the second bus and go to the destinations and create the queue. And this is just the normal queue which is local to the second bus. And that's it we need to do as reference to the queue points here in the remote bus. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 16. Here we need to create the some foreign bus connections again in the second bus, which is the foreign bus to the local bus, to the first bus, sorry. Here configure the foreign bus connection in the remote bus. Note that the name of the foreign bus in the sibling name should be the same whatever we define as the sibling in the first bus. Then once you click on this foreign bus connections in the second bus, a pop-up window will open, and you need to give all the configuration parameters for the siblings there. Next slide, slide number 17. Okay, this is the screen where we need to give the basic key configuration things. Here we choose the second radio button because both of my buses are in the local cell. And here if you pay attention to the name of the service integration bus, here we choose as first bus because we want to create the sibling between first bus and second bus, and the gateway messaging engine in the foreign bus. So that is the messaging engine at the in the foreign bus, which is the local bus. The name of the messaging engine is this one, first bus underscore cluster 1000 first bus. And the name of the service integration bus link, this is where we need to pay attention. We need to give the exactly the same name of the sibling, whatever we gave the sibling name in the foreign bus, where we configure the sibling for the first bus. And target inbound transport chain, here you should set inbound basic messaging because we don't have configured any security here. And the last configuration in this screen is bootstrap service integration bus provider endpoints. This is the basic triplet local host followed by the SIB endpoint and transport chain, which are referring to the remote bus, which is the first bus that are configured in the first bus. This is the basic configuration steps for the SIB link in this screen. Next slide, slide number 18. Now we have done the configuration for the SIB link in the created the connection to the SIB link for the foreign bus. Now navigate to the second bus and go to the foreign bus connections, and here you should see the first bus and click on the first bus, and this is the screenshot from that first bus. Once you click on the service integration bus in the foreign bus, which is the first bus, to the second bus, you would see the screenshot just like in the next screen. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 19. Here this is the sibling which we see in the second bus. For the second bus, foreign bus is first bus. See the exactly the name of the sibling. The same, it should be same in the both buses. And here the attention, you pay the attention to the local messaging engine, which is the second bus messaging engine, and the foreign bus messaging engine is which is messaging engine which is in the first bus. Here still the status is showing as unknown. The question mark, it should be if the link is up and running and healthy. In that case, we should see the solid green arrow mark. Still, the SIB link is not started. We will see why it's not started in the next screens. And you can see the messages inbound, outbound, and messages sent and received through this SIB link. Next slide, slide number 20. Okay. So here, make sure that you have created the SIB link in both the local bus and foreign bus to each other. And the thing is, in order to run the SIB link between the buses, the messaging engine should be up and running. In order to run the messaging engines, we need to start the servers in the cluster or whatever is the bus member of the buses. So once you start the servers and clusters in that both buses, once the messaging engine is up and running successfully, then the SIB link automatically start running, and here you should see the solid green arrow mark, and the status is showing as okay. If the SIB link is not started, then you should see some you should not see the solid green marks, just like the question mark, whatever we see in the previous screen, or it's partially started, something like status other than this solid green arrow mark. And also here you see that messages sent, three messages are sent, and the other side three messages are received. This is the message count. You can see the message inbound and outbound messaging which are waiting and messages sent and received across the SIBLINK. Next slide, slide number 21. Here, this is the one last part we need to configure in order to send the messages directly once the producer application send the messages to the local queue. Here, what you need to do is we need to create for the to route the messages to the remote queue. Here, as soon as the messages reaches the local queue on the first bus, what we need to do is you need to define the forward routing path. If you go to the queue, there is an option in the bottom of that screen, default forward routing path. Here we need to give the name of the bus and name of the queue. Here, just like whatever I mentioned, foreign bus name and foreign bus destination name. Here, I define the foreign queue. That is the foreign queue, the second bus queue, and name of the bus is second bus. So it should be in the form of the, as mentioned in the example, second bus colon followed by the second bus queue name. By this time, all the configuration parts we are done with the all the queues configuration and also the sibling configuration. We are done with the 100% configuration part at this point. Next slide, slide number 22. Okay, now it's time to test the sibling and send the messages from the producer application and see whether the messages are passed across the SIBLINK and reached at the local queue of the second bus. Here, there are many ways you can send the messages. In general, customers use their own application to send the messages. And there are also so many additional tools, and one of them we generally quite often we use as a testing tool. SIB bus nation handle. Please note that this is IBM tool, but this is not supported by the IBM support channels. Many of our customers use this tool without any problems, but if you have any questions or if you need any support regarding this tool, you need to check with the author of this tool as mentioned in the README file of this tool. You cannot get the support of this tool from the IBM support channels. And in order to invoke this tool, just you need to start this jar file by using the simple Java command line. This is the one command I mentioned in this screenshot. In order to invoke this tool to send the messages. This tool, the README text file comes with this tool, has the complete instructions how to run and everything, how to use this tool and everything, all the information is included in the README text file of this tool. Next slide, slide number 23. Okay. You need to, just a very small minor configuration you need to do in order to connect this tool to the SIBLINK and bus and queues. This is once you invoke the tool by using the just Java command in the previous screen, this is what we see the tool window. And here, just in the right side screen, you need to configure to connect to the servers. In order to connect to the servers, you can use either DManager in the ND version or any base application server. Just you need to give the host name and SOAP port. Next slide has the details. Next slide, slide number 24. Here, once you click on the configuration, configure, then this is the screen connect you would get. Runtime discovery connection details screenshot. Here in this one, just you need to define the, you need to give the host name or IP address of the where the server is located. You can give either the DManager or any base application server host name and the port of that SOAP port of that server. And then click on the OK button, then you will see the connection successful. If you enable the security, then you need to give the username password in this pop-up window. Once you are done with the once you connect these two to the any of the servers, then one another step you need to do is you need to give the in the right side of the screenshot. You need to give the bus to connect to, bus name. If you see the green boxes, one is the test connection and the other big box is the settings to connect to your messaging engine. Here you need to give the first bus and name of the local bus and the host name of the bus and provider endpoints. First bus is the bus name and provider endpoints is the host name followed by the SIP endpoint port and SIP transport chain. Once you give that basic information, just check the click on the test connection and you would be able to connect to the SIP any of the SIP bootstrap servers. Next slide number 25. Here in the previous screen there is a button to the send the messages. If you click on the send messages button in the right side panel of the previous screen, this is the pop-up window you will see, and here you need to give the queue topic space. Here in this case, our name of the local queue is the first bus queue, and just give the how many number of messages in the message count. Here in this example, I gave 10 as the 10 as the, to send the messages. Once you click on the send button here, here the all the send, 10 messages are sent, and it will give you the pop-up window by saying, hey, just send 10 messages are sent. So but up to this point, we send the messages to the local queue, which is hosted in the first bus to the producer application. Next slide, slide number 26. Here, we have configured the SIP link and also the queue forward path. And once the messages are sent by the producer application to the bus first queue, if you see the first queue in the local queue of the first bus, if you see the queue depth of the of that local bus queue, here you see in the top screenshot the queue depth is zero. And if you see the message count in the queue point of the second bus where the remote destination is hosted, here in that one you will see the queue depth as 10. So that means what it means is the producer application send the messages to the local queue of the first bus. Based on the configuration, whatever is we configured so far in this presentation, SIP link and also the forward path of the queue, the messages are automatically routed to the remote queue, which is hosted in the remote bus. So that means the messages are passed across the SIP link and successfully reached the remote destination. This is in this example, I explained everything how to configure the messages from A to B. In the same way, bus A to bus B, in the same way, you can configure the SIP link from B to A to send the messages from bus B to bus A. And this is exactly the same as configuration we did, but in a different with a different link, you need to use all the same related configuration part to send the messages vice versa from bus B to bus A. This is the pretty much basic configuration and the testing part. It looks like it is a very complex part, but if you go through the screenshots and screen by screen, it is pretty easy, and you would be able to see, you would be able to troubleshoot on your own for the very basic things. And for the complex troubleshooting part, Ty will cover from this point. Next slide, slide number 27. Hey, Ty, now it's yours, and Ty will cover all the troubleshooting part as well as the tuning part.
Okay, thank you, Jyoti, and good morning, everyone. As you can see from the material that Jyoti covered, service integration bus links configuration is it's not trivial. There's quite a few steps involved. There's a lot of screens you have to go through, and because of that, there's a lot of places to make mistakes. And so we're going to cover some troubleshooting stuff here that may assist you if your bus link is not working. And we're going to sort of pick the low-hanging fruit first, in other words, the common things. And then we'll get into some things that are a little more esoteric that you don't see very often, but it's important that you know that they're available to you. So now that you've verified the bus link starts, hopefully, normally, and that messages are able to flow with the bus link to the remote bus if you use that test procedure that Jauncey just went through. But what if something doesn't work right or work as expected? The next set of slides will show you what to check for the most common issues. Slide 28, please. Okay, the most common bus link problem is a failure of messages to flow over the link. That's almost self-evident, but it should be stated. The first thing you should do is check your bus link status. And the links there show you exactly how to get there in the admin console, the trail. And here we see the bus link status is only partially green, and you can see there's a little warning message beneath it. It says no connection established. So that tells you right off the bat there's something wrong. And below that it says make sure the link is running a solid green status. If it's only partially started, as in this example above, then manually stop and restart the link. If it still doesn't start, check your bus link configuration. A couple things about that. Anytime a bus link does not start, the first obvious thing to do is stop and restart it. And the reason for that is because the bus link code is very complex, but one of the things that we do under the covers is we do a lot of status checking, state checking. We try to make sure that both ends of the link are in agreement on some things, which we'll get into here in a minute. But sometimes stopping and starting will fix the problem, especially if it's a networking problem where there was a network interruption of some sort, and for whatever reason the link wasn't able to reestablish a connection. Oftentimes stopping and restart it will fix the problem. So that's the first obvious thing to do. And as you can see in this panel in the upper left-hand corner, there is a stop and start button, so you can manually stop and start it. But if that doesn't work, then let's take a look at the list of four items here below at the bottom. Some things to check. First, is the Bootstrap's endpoint set to the correct value? Second, are you able to ping the host name, a port specified in the Bootstrap endpoint configuration? Third, is the bus link on the remote bus the same name as the link that isn't starting? And is the remote bus a secure bus that requires a user ID to connect? And Jauncey kind of covered all these things. But the upshot is this. If you just configured a link and it's brand new and you've never used it before and you try to start it and it doesn't start or only partially starts like you see here, it's 99% likely that you've got a configuration problem. So somewhere in those panels you went through, there's something not correct. And it's probably this Bootstrap endpoint stuff that Jauncey went over, which tells the bus link where to connect to. The other common problem we see, though, and that's why I mention it here, is the links are not the same name on both ends. They absolutely must be identical names. We see probably a third to half of the bus link situations that come in is because the bus link names are not the same. And the info center is not particularly clear about that, so we've kind of banged on that point a little bit over and over again in this because that's a very common problem and it's super important. So let's move to slide 29, please. Okay, you should also check your bus link transmitter. The link transmitter acts as a transmission queue where produced messages are persisted before transmission across the service integration bus link. You can find this by navigating as follows. And again, you just follow that in the admin console. It'll take you right there. And in this example, we can see that the bus link or the transmission queue is basically stopped. Okay, and it says make sure the transmitter rather. It says make sure the transmitter is running a green status. If it's not, like this, or if it's an incorrect state, which would be amber, then manually stop and restart the link again for the reasons I outlined a minute ago. Now, notice here on the right-hand side we have some additional columns, and to the upper left we have some buttons. Let's talk about those for a moment. Let's move to slide 30, please. Okay. Let's talk about the right-hand columns because people do have questions about those and what those mean. It says if you take a closer look at the link transmitter screenshot below, you'll notice some columns on the right. Current outbound messages is for messages that are currently on the link transmitter waiting to be transmitted. Messages sent is the total number of messages sent since the link was started, and time since last message sent can give you a good indication of how long the link has been down or inoperative. When viewed as a whole, these values provide some sense of how bad the problem is. For example, if the time since the last message sent, like it says here, is infinite, that means that nothing has ever been sent. So right away, you know there's a big problem. Also notice that you have buttons for deleting all messages from the link transmitter, or if you choose, you can actually move messages from the link transmitter to the messaging engine exception destination that is local to the link transmitter. Let me talk about that for a second. Every bus has an exception destination, and that's a place where messages are put when we cannot move them internally from point A to point B. For example, if we try to deliver a message to a message-driven bean, and for some reason we can't, after repeated attempts, we will eventually move that message to the exception destination instead of just throwing it away. The exception destination is just a queue, and you can go out there and look at it, and you can decide what you want to do with those messages. Do you want to try to reprocess them, or do you want to delete them, whatever you want to do? Well, the link transmitter has a really interesting feature in that you can delete all the messages on the link transmitter if you don't need them or if you think they're causing a problem. Likewise, you can move the messages to the exception destination. I will tell you, messages themselves don't really cause problems with bus links. I've never seen that. So I would not assume that there's something in the message content that's causing the problem, or the message. It could be a problem with the message header, though. But if it's the message header, it's because something in your configuration is not correct. That's pretty much guaranteed. So, lastly, it says at the bottom, lastly, it is possible to view a similar panel for link receivers, but this is almost never done when troubleshooting bus link problems. The issue is best approached from the link transmitter end of the link. I can tell you from experience that it's always the link transmitter end that's in question, so that's where I would always start. So let's move to slide 31, please. Okay, bus links generally do not print a lot of messages in the system out logs. They'll let you know when they're starting or stopping, but apart from that, they don't really put a lot of information into the logs. So sometimes troubleshooting them can be a little bit tough. And you can turn on trace and so on, which we'll talk about in a second, but it would be helpful if we could get additional information in the logs without having to turn on trace. So let's read from the top here. It says, in addition to looking at the WAS admin console, you should check the system out log files for any exceptions that occur whenever you try to start the link. Search the files for CWS IP type messages, especially CWS IP 05 and 07 type messages. Those are the big ones. If the messages are inconclusive or non-existent, then the problem is likely one of three possibilities. A remote destination has reached its high message threshold. In other words, the remote destination has the maximum number of messages allowed on it. As a result, no more messages can be sent over the link to the destination, but there is no room for them on the destination. Number two, transaction for the message isn't completing. In most cases, it will be in an in-doubt state. And number three, there is a gap in the order stream or sequence number of messages such that the messaging engines on each end of the bus link do not agree on which message should be sent next. Let me talk briefly about these. These are situations that can occur that will not print out any specific information in the logs by default. So you won't know that any of these are happening. But what we see sometimes is that when messages are sent over the link, they have to go to a remote queue. Well, there should be an application connected to that queue consuming or removing those messages from the queue. But if that's not happening and messages continue to be sent, eventually that queue could fill up. And when that happens, we simply will not send any more messages because there's no room for them on the remote end. That's a fairly common problem, so that's certainly something you want to check. The transaction not completing, there could be a variety of reasons for that, but it's not at all evident that that's the problem when you look at the logs. And the third one there, the gap in the ordered stream, the sequence number, the sender side and the receiver side of a bus link have a mechanism that tracks which messages are sent across the link. And every message gets a number, a sequence number. And so both ends have to agree about which message is going to get sent next. If message number 9 was just sent, then they both have to agree that 9 is committed. We're done with that. Let's move on to message number 10. However, sometimes, especially when there's networking problems, the two ends will lose track of which message is next. So one end might think that number 10 should be sent next, and the other end might think that number 1 should be sent next. So there can be disagreement on each end, and when that happens, messages will not flow, but it won't be very obvious from looking at the logs. So what can we do about this? How do we get more information into the logs? Well, what we can do is set these four custom properties that you see listed here. Now, these are not in the info center, okay, and they're here for your benefit and so that you know that they're out there if you need them, but we won't go into terrible detail about them because that won't be helpful to you. You won't remember it anyways, but know that they're here and available for you. So the first one is log all message step intervals, and the second one is step threshold events. The third one is block committing message interval, and the last one is log unresolved gaps in transmission streams. Set these in the messaging engine custom properties. The bus link itself doesn't have a custom properties section, but you set these in the messaging engine custom properties. Setting these properties will increase the number of diagnostic messages about the bus link that are printed in the system out log file. So these messages will provide a more detailed look at the link behavior. So rather than turning on trace, you can set these properties. You'll have to restart the messaging engine for them to take effect. Give them these default values, and they will print out much more information. Let's just take a little bit more detailed look at that. Next slide, 32, please. Okay, here's a quick breakdown of each property, all four of these. The first one is log all message depth intervals, and I'll just read this to you. It says this property will enable logging of CWSIP 078 type messages to tell us if messages are accumulating on the source messaging engine and not sent over the link. You can set the value to any integer, zero is the default. Every multiple of the integer will force one of these messages to be printed. You can also tune this property to specify a specific destination or form bus you want to monitor by setting the following additional property. And you can see the dest or form bus part at the end. It says where dest or form bus is the name of a destination or the name of an individual form bus. Note that the name is case sensitive. So in other words, you can monitor the sending end by setting this property to see if messages are accumulating at some point before they get to the bus link. That will tell you this. That's a very rare situation, but you can check it with this. Slide 33, please. Okay, this property, the log depth threshold events, says this property prints a message when a destination has reached its high message threshold, when the destination is completely full of messages and cannot accept more. When this property is enabled, look for CWSIP 005 or 055 type messages in the system out log. A value of length, the default value, causes a message to be logged when the transmission stream of an interbus or WebSphere MQ link reaches the high message threshold. And a value of on causes a message to be logged if any destination or transmission stream reaches the high message threshold. And if a destination or message stream on the link reaches the high message threshold, this suggests that there might be an issue with message processing on the receiver end, which is what I was just talking about a minute ago. Check the consumer application on the receiving remote bus and make sure it is running and processing messages from the foreign destination in a timely manner. In other words, if messages are accumulating on the receiving end, on the remote queue that we're sending messages over the link to, and that queue finally fills up and we can't send anymore, you won't know it unless you have this property set. This property, you should always set it in a troubleshooting situation because that scenario is very common. So let's move on to slide 34, please. Okay, the block committing message interval. These next ones are not used frequently, but it's good to know about them. It says if a transaction is blocking transmission of messages for longer than the number of milliseconds specified in the tuning parameter, a CWSIP 0785 warning message is logged. If the transaction eventually resolves, a CWSIP 0786I message is printed. If you're going to set any of these parameter or custom properties, set them all, but this one here is probably not going to play into your problem very often, if ever. So let's move on to slide 35, please. Okay, log unresolved gaps in the transmission streams. It says with this parameter set, a messaging engine receiving messages over connection will write a log entry if a gap in the order stream or sequence number of messages is detected and is not resolved within the specified interval. As short-lived gaps are expected under normal operation, it is recommended that the parameter should be set to a value greater than 5,000 milliseconds. If a long loop gap is detected and is subsequently resolved, a second log entry is written to show when the gap was resolved. This setting this property will write CWSIP 079 type messages to the log. So if you think you may have some sort of a sequence number or order gap problem, which can happen, by the way, very easily if you have a networking problem, the bus link will try to resolve it on its own. It's usually pretty good about that. But if it can't, for some reason, because maybe if there was a network interruption, not only was there a sequence number mismatch, but there might be a transaction that's in doubt now. So if that transaction stays in doubt for a long time, then this might tell you that in a sense, because it's going to start printing out certain messages after a specified time. So this is definitely a good one to set. Next slide, slide 36, please. Okay, if you cannot determine the problem from the messages in the log files, it may become necessary to trace your bus link operation. The procedure is, first, manually stop the messaging engine the bus link is configured on in the WAS admin console. Set the custom properties in the messaging engine custom properties. We already talked about that. Enable the following trace on all servers in the messaging cluster. And you can see the trace string there. And then manually start the messaging engine and wait for the failure to happen. It will probably fail immediately. In other words, when the messaging engine starts, the bus link should start on its own. If there's a problem there, it'll fail immediately. Be sure to check the bus link status before stopping the trace. Disable the trace by changing it to the default string, which is star equals info. And then open a PMR with IBM and send in all the trace and the system.log files from all the servers in your messaging cluster. That'll get us started on the problem. And usually these can be sorted out fairly quickly. But you can avoid all this by first just try to stop and restart the bus link manually, because a lot of times that'll clear these problems up. So let's move on to slide 37, please. Okay, it is possible to tune bus links. Based on my experience, I can honestly say that this is really never done. Most problems with bus link performance are connected to network latency rather than bus link configuration, but they're here if you want them. The first one is the RL dispatcher max queue size to ME. It says this parameter determines how many messages and control flows the sending side of the connection can place into an in-memory buffer for transmission over the network. Users experiencing inefficiency are recommended to test with a small buffer size. For example, start with a value of 96 bytes and then tune and test iteratively. This is basically just buffer tuning, and so will it help? Maybe. But if the underlying problem is network latency, it may not do anything for you. In fact, it might even make the problem worse. So use these with caution. Test them if you want. But in most cases, you're not likely to see a big change if the problem is network latency. So the next one is processor transmission stream gap eagerness. Now, this parameter determines how long a receiving messaging engine will wait before it re-requests a message that is expected due to its sequence number and has not yet been received. In a high-throughput or low-network-speed environment, increasing this value can reduce the likelihood of a message being re-requested while it is already queued for transfer over the network connection. Be aware that increasing this value can increase the time to automatically resolve a gap, which occurs due to a network error or restart of one end of the link. I honestly would not set this unless it was recommended explicitly by IBM. If you start fooling around with this, you might find yourself in a real pickle later on if you have a problem, if you don't know the exact ramifications of what you're setting. So these are out there. They're available. But unless explicitly told to by IBM, I would not mess with these. And slide 38, please. Okay, summary. This presentation discussed the basic configuration required for bus links. It provided a method for testing your bus link and discussed basic troubleshooting, tracing, and tuning of bus links. Use this presentation as an overview and a guide on bus links, but you should also refer to the WAS Information Center, and there's the link directly to the bus link information in the Info Center. And let's move on to slide 39, please. And that's it. That concludes this presentation. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Thank you, John C. and Ty, for this wonderful presentation.
I would like to add one thing. If you guys have any other questions regarding any of the siblings configuration or troubleshooting, In future, you can also send an email to me or Ty. The email addresses are mentioned on the first page of this presentation. You can send an email to us, and we will be very happy to address if you have any questions in future.
Thank you, Jonsi. Now, I do see a question here, actually two questions in the group chat. The first question is, does SIP-Link support other non-WAS bus?
Unfortunately, no. If you are using a WebSphere application server, then only we support SIP-Link configuration between the buses. So non-IBM products or non-WAS products. Non-WAS products, that means are you talking about any stacked products, which bit, which is stacked on top of WebSphere, or what do you mean by non-WAS bus? For non-WAS bus, that means I understand the customer is using the non-IBM products, then it is not. In case if customer is using IBM stacked products, for example, ESB or WPS or WSRR or Rotus or WebSphere Partner Gateway, for those IBM stack products which is using SIP-Link internally, for those, yes, we do support SIP-Links for those IBM stack products which are using SIP component internally. And the second one is, if there is a message sequence number mismatch between the transmission link, how to manually resync, then you need to, Ty, would you like to take that one?
Yeah, sure. The configuration panels don't really offer a way to manually reset the sequence number. You can do that with WebSphere and Q-Links. With those, you can do a reset from the sender side, and that will reset both ends of the link, either to zero or some value you prefer. However, that's not the case with the bus links. The bus links don't have a provision for that, although I will tell you that they normally sort out any kind of sequence gap on their own. There's a lot of code that checks that and tries to solve those problems on their own. It's not a common problem. It's not a terribly common problem. And I think that stopping and restarting the bus link automatically resets it to zero. So stopping and restarting should do the trick for you, but there's not like a reset button or a resync button by itself. Hope that answers your question.
So at this time, since we have no more additional questions, we will conclude the presentation. Thank you, John C. and Ty, for presenting today.